Okay. I'm just going to broaden the scope of what you in, of your introduction. But oh, I'm sorry. Yes, Stephen Balcom, CEO of the Family Online Safety Institute based in Washington, D.C. So I just wanted to say that we had a discussion in this room earlier this morning that broadened the scope and reach of, I think, of the debate that we want to have. And that is, not just are we talking about illegal materials such as child abuse images and sexual exploitation, but also material that is lawful, is legal, but potentially harmful to minors. So in that category goes adult pornography and violent images and gambling and all kinds of stuff that some parents feel is literally potentially harmful to their children. In some cases it's simply offensive, but there's another distinction. So that we have a very, in some cases, quite a black and white situation or clearly defined situation with illegal material such as child porn. But then we have a much grayer area of this legal but potentially harmful. Harmful to minors is a phrase used a lot in the States. And this is where an awful lot of the debate happens around filtering, restrictions, potential censorship, and so on. Actually, I wonder if we could hear, first of all, from Harvard. And what is the perspective do you guys have? And what are you hearing in this room, or for that matter, in this the last couple of days, about this issue? I'd love to hear it framed from your position.
I'm not sure I'm going to do a very good job of framing the discussions that all of you have had. So I guess I don't want to attempt that. But it would also be helpful if you could frame it in questions, I guess. I've discussed some of our perspectives already. One is the problem, which I see as fundamental in the internet, which is somewhat new, is that everything is everywhere, and such that the solutions, at least the technical solutions to removing content from the internet, apply everywhere. And we don't have the same natural gradients across users, across locations, across jurisdictions that we had in traditional media and in print media. You didn't have libraries that were regulated essentially at the community level. You didn't have newsstands that were regulated by the country or the community level. And you didn't have the easy identification of users as well. So this means that the stakes are higher in so many ways, and that if you put in blanket controls that apply to all sites and all materials out on the internet, you're obviously going to make mistakes. And then you're left with the question of, if you do apply these, where do you draw the line? And who draws the line? And those are both important questions, which I don't have the answers to. I mean, I think we clearly agree that there's a lot on the internet that the world would be better off without. And how do you remove that which you don't like while leaving what you like, and who decides what that is? And I don't have the answers to that, unfortunately, but those are the challenges as I see them.
Well, let me ask you then, phrase it in a question. Are you, or is the center, fundamentally opposed to filtering, or is there an acceptance that filtering is an okay thing, but under certain circumstances? What do you guys have a position on that?
I work at the OpenNet Initiative, so I think in some ways we've kind of put our thoughts on our sleeves, but they're a little more subtle than that, in that we believe all else being equal, greater openness is better. But there are clearly reasons to regulate the internet, and how those decisions are made, I think, are political decisions, and most appropriately political decisions. And I guess our concern is more that these decisions are made in a democratic and a participatory way, and that people understand the trade-offs that are involved in that. Because from where we see it, I believe there are trade-offs.
Can I just make an attempt to broaden out the scope even further? Because we seem to be constantly talking about content on the internet, and I'd like to broaden it out to talk about behavior on the internet, because when we talk about potentially illegal and harmful content, we talk about solutions to this involving filtering and raising awareness with a view to maybe a cognitive change. but this doesn't necessarily affect behavior, which is putting children at risk. And especially in a time when we're talking about very dynamic content being generated by users on the internet, and maybe the communication aspect rather than the content production aspect of the internet being the area where children are potentially at risk of harm, I think maybe this is something we should focus on as a solution coming from somewhere in the realms of behavior change rather than pure awareness raising. And I look to models like behavior change programs in relation to prevention of the spread of AIDS in the developing world, or in relation to initiatives to reduce the amount of young people smoking in the Western world and that kind of thing. And maybe that would be a slightly broader framework than we start with, but maybe something that would be useful for all of us.
Yeah, I don't disagree with the broad point of what broad thrust of the comments you've just made, but my understanding of the reason we were meeting here now today, and we're meeting for what, another 40 minutes, is that right, was to try and build bridges between the so-called free speech community, or however you want to characterize it, and the child protection communities, because historically, and I think often inaccurately, they've been perceived as being on different sides of the fence and as it were inherently antagonistic towards each other. And all I can say is, based on my individual experience of talking to people from that community, certainly when you meet them in private over in a bar, or when they're speaking entirely off the record, there's no disagreement at all between I haven't met anybody from the free speech community who's in favor of child pornography being freely available to everybody. I've not met anybody from the free speech community who thinks it's a good thing that young children are exposed to extremely hardcore sexual images. There is no fundamental antithesis in my experience between us and that community. What we've never had, however, is a dialogue, where we can kind of work things out. And that has resulted, certainly in the UK at any rate, on occasions, in kind of unhelpful expressions of disagreement taking place in the media. And that helps nobody, because particularly if it's founded on a misapprehension about where we're all coming from. Now, it would be wrong. I mean, I think you are the only chap here who's, as it were, from that bit of the spectrum. And I don't think 18 or 19 against one are fair odds, and it's unfortunate that more of the people from that community, perhaps they didn't see the leaflet, perhaps they weren't aware that this meeting was taking place. All I can say is that I'd like to just make two points. We did once try in the UK to try to get together a number of the leading protagonists from the so-called free speech civil liberties community to have a debate with us. It failed. I'm now even more determined when we get back to have another go at trying to get it off the ground again. My suggestion is that each of us try and do the same thing when we get back home in our own countries, because I think it would be very, very unfortunate if, something bad happens on the internet and, there's a round, because we're talking about very political issues that take place always nearly always in the full glare of the media publicity, and politicians jump on things because there are always going to be votes in knocking them. No politician is going to lose votes by saying, let's do something bad to paedophiles, or let's do something good for children. I mean, it's just as simple as that. And if we are not actively engaging in this process, we run the risks of becoming pawns of one side or another in what is a highly political environment. So, for my part, and in fact we started the discussions here because we met with the guys from Amnesty International, and we've exchanged business cards, and we realized that we have several mutual friends in common, and we drink in the same pubs sometimes. So when we get back to London, we are going to take them up on that offer and begin that kind of dialogue, because now I'm sure there will be points where we will not agree about where different lines should be drawn, and that's okay. But what is completely destructive and corrosive is people doubting the good faith and the motives of where people are coming from in this debate. That if you cannot establish that basic level of understanding and communication, that there is really no hope for having any kind of constructive way forward.
I went to your session yesterday. I did go to your session last night. Yesterday was, and I asked a question about one of the options that you could think of in terms of heightening the issue of child protection, having the possibility of identifying a person when that person goes online. And it seems to be one of the trends you can see in certain countries. I know Belgium, they have been implemented an electronic ID, basically. So all people, all citizens of Belgium above the age of 16 are obliged by law to obtain such an ID. And the ID contains a microchip which will give you access to all social security services and so forth and so forth. So, of course, it's going to be the endless opportunities offered through that type of ID. And I'm not even sure this is science fiction or maybe, I think a lot of countries are aiming at going the same direction. I know in Denmark, they were calling me every day, ever since I told them that this was going on in Belgium, that they're so keen on having some type of electronic ID methodology to be able to connect the citizens with the government that is going increasingly electronically. So there will be opportunities for actually opportunities. There will be situations where the identification of a person is going to be easier to obtain. We spoke about that yesterday, and I posed a question because I understand that in terms of being able to post a message online anonymously makes you not vulnerable towards governments who wants to come down and suppress certain types of information that could be critical to whatever. So there seems to be a big trade-off. And John was at this discussion in Oxford a couple of years back again, where we had sort of a European philosophy and American philosophy, and I don't want to confine it to these two entities, but in terms of freedom of speech, you know, and the trade-off from privacy to security, there needs to be somewhere down the line an agreement on where to go. What I learned from the answers that I got from the board yesterday, and this is what I want to go to, is an openness towards the possibility of, and I think you also mentioned it now, that certain types of regulation of the content online is somewhat accepted according to who makes that judgment. I think those are the pertinent questions. And those are also the questions we face in Denmark and European level in terms of who makes the judgment. That seems to be, for me, the biggest issue that comes across. But I also mentioned to the lawyer from Ireland, the human rights lawyer from Ireland, I can't remember his name, it doesn't matter, but he was quite an intelligent person, basically. But are we really addressing this question the right way? Because it seems to be we can only find the same arguments all the time for our own target of users that we want to protect, or should we go somewhere else? Should we reformulate the problems we're facing? Because right now, I can't really see an easy way. For instance,
I took the microphone because I was expecting the word after him. If it's okay, if it's no, it's my time. Okay, I'll try to be another representative from non-English speaking countries. thank you. I don't feel in Norway maybe this sort of a diplomatic version of this. I don't know, but because we don't feel that there are really large differences in Norway on the views of this perspective, we are working very closely with the police. The police are the hotline in Norway, and we think that's only natural that the police should be the place to take all these things, and they take it very seriously. At the same time, we have to have a knowledge level or base or understanding of what are the main challenges. And what we are experiencing here for these days is that there's a lot of focus on exploitation of children, of the sexual aspect of it, and pedophilia. But the main challenges for 99% of the kids in Norway, and I guess in the rest of Europe, is the kind of harassment and bullying they are experiencing between each other. So I think so the thing is, what is the theme? What are we discussing? So we are here and we're talking about the sexual exploitation of children, and we're talking about pedophilia. Very interesting, because it's the worst thing, worst scenario, and we don't like it, none of us, of course, and we'll do what we can to get rid of it. And we have to do things on the legislation level, and we have to do things on the collaborative level between the industry, as we do in Norway, and between the police, and between the awareness node and the media authority. But the fundamental understanding of the freedom of speech is very high in Norway, and of course we have the cultural aspect of it that is somewhat different from other countries, and that will be there. But we must have respect for each other's view, and we have to collaborate on those issues that are most dangerous, like harassment or exploitation of children and that perspective. But at the same time, I'm working mostly with the main challenges that are between the children in Norway, and that is harassment and the frightening material they receive is things that they make and send between each other, and they make it themselves too. Right. Okay.
So this goes back to your point on behavior.
Yeah.
Robert, do you want to any thoughts at this point?
I'm happy to respond again. Can you hear me without the microphone? Or?
There is an area with where the balance of between freedom of expression and security is already found, which is mass media regulation. In most countries and in civilized, decent countries, mass media are more or less regulated. For example, in the United States, I think in the channel broadcasting TV channel, there are no pornography and no obscene words. If you want pornography, you can buy it as a cable channel. So perhaps also no decent countries will allow to have a newspaper with racist or Nazi publications. So why should the regulation for internet be different? Okay, there are two types of sites. Some of them could be understood as private, but some of them could be really understood as mass media site. So perhaps just a question of better regulation and better definitions of internet resources as mass media. For example, in America there is a blog, personal blog, called PerezHilton.com with 5 million people attending it every day. So it is obviously a mass media resources now. But this guy is giving pornographic pictures of the celebrities and is insulting them every day in big numbers. So perhaps it just they need to get a better regulation, legal regulation for this and define it just an ordinary mass media site. And then it should be regulated. No, it should not be banned. Just on the level of legislation, that kind of blogs, which are renewed periodically, for example, annually or daily, they should be treated equally to newspapers or journals. And perhaps then this guy will regulate himself.
No, I just wanted to share with you the German experience with harmful content, because under the German law, it is already illegal if the content provider distributing the harmful content doesn't use any safety measures. However, the problem is in practical terms, because there is so much harmful content out there that the public bodies are not capable, simply because of lack of resources, to put this into practice. So, but that's our situation. So in other words, I think it doesn't really help a lot to illegalize harmful content. I think it's much more important that we work in this area on education and also to really raise social responsibility on the internet.
I would like to get back to that question of ID, because in Germany we have the same situation. We will have an electronic ID card from 2010 on, and there are some thoughts on how to use it and should it be used for some situations online. And I didn't understand, you said it would be rejected in total, or would it be agreeable if there are some situations where you can say, okay, It should be used for identification of persons, but not in all use of internet and online. For example, I know from Belgium that they use it as age verification, but the other way around. Children who want to access to a chat, they use their ID card to prove that they are underage, not overage. So by that way you can ensure that only children or only minors have access to that chat, and I think that might be a good solution if you use it at the right places.
This might come as an odd question, but I wonder if we should not make the difference between what we perceive as being disturbing as adults, to think that a child might look at adult material, and what is actually disturbing for the child, because these are two different issues. I wonder if anyone has information on research that has been conducted with children that proves that it is actually harmful for the child to look at adult material, and what kind of harm is this?
Any researchers in the room?
Well, there are ethical problems about doing what you've just said. You cannot. I mean, you would never in a British university get a proposal passed the ethics committee which allowed you to set up a control group of children that you then exposed, you made them watch Nazi propaganda and people having their heads chopped off and their entrails dragged out and hardcore sex, and another group of children who weren't allowed to watch those images, and then measure the difference in terms of the trauma. It simply, you could not ethically do it. So you have to... You have to some degree. I mean, there is other evidence which suggests, put it that way, through if you speak to psychotherapists, if you speak to people who deal clinically with children in all kinds of situations, there is a great deal of individual evidence of that kind which suggests that exposure to certain types of material can have a profoundly damaging, psychologically damaging, traumatizing effect on children. And that just brings up make two quick related points. People have often said, when the debates in the 60s and 70s were taking place about what's the effect of children being exposed to violence on TV or to sex on TV or things of this kind. And they said, we haven't noticed large numbers of children rushing out and killing people, you know, as a result of watching a cowboy movie or something of that kind. Nor that children have suddenly become massively sexually active because they happen to have seen the odd Playboy magazine or the odd movie. But that is absolutely not the position that now exists with the internet, because with the internet, we've got, for the first time ever, a medium that can provide the means for persistent, relentless, continuous exposure to a whole range of materials which children 10 years ago, certainly 15, 20 years ago, would never and have never been exposed to. So now, some children probably quite like it, but they are children, and we have a responsibility as adults to exercise reasonable judgments about these things. I mean, when I ask my children what they want, I always know what the answer is going to be, and it isn't always what's necessarily best for them. We have to negotiate and mediate these things within families. Final quick point is this. The child protection community in the UK has never, ever suggested that violent images or sexual images or material of that kind should not be published. We have never said it should be removed from the internet. We've taken no position at all on whether or not that material is good or bad in any kind of abstract sense. Personally, I think a lot of it is, as you said. The world would be better off without it, but that isn't the point. The point is, what is it that, as responsible adults or people engaged in this kind of work, what is it that it is reasonable that children should be able to access and be exposed to? And how do we try to construct an environment which allows them to grow up as children and doesn't expose them to material which by common consent is harmful or is likely to be harmful? So it's not about depriving other people of the opportunity to look at this material. Absolutely not. What it is about is trying to create an environment which keeps children as safe as they can be. When they're 18, when they're 19, God knows, I know people of 50 who shouldn't be looking at this material, but that's, but when they become legal adults, they will make these decisions for themselves. Our responsibility is to do the best we can for up to the point that they become adults.
Let's hear from, yes.
Not responding to this, I just wonder, since time is limited, everybody is hungry, and I'm sure has another workshop to get through, I just wonder, out of this meeting, whether we can perhaps say something relevant to this IGF meeting and the ones that are coming, because I think part of the reason for calling this attempt to build bridges, as John says, is that we haven't found it in the organization of this meeting, and we do want, we would like it to happen. So John suggested going back home and working on this question. I just wonder whether we can grab the opportunity from today and actually do something now, here and now, as well as continuing to work on it. And I just wanted to get that in quickly before the next speaker.
Stay there and keep the microphone. What would you had to propose something, Joe. What would you propose?
Well, at the very least, a statement out of this meeting, if we can draft something. But I don't know, there are a few more open slots, a little bit more time left before the thing closes tomorrow. Also, I think we're a little bit Eurocentric in our approach at the moment. There must be other ideas in the room. It would be good to hear. This group. Well, at the moment, it's mainly NGOs. I mean, I think it's John's made a point. It's very good of Bob to come to this meeting. Yes. All right. Well, I don't know. I just think we should make something of this opportunity, but not imposed, obviously. It has to be the decision of the group.
Yeah. Okay, I wanted to say that I would agree that it probably is a great opportunity for us to think about using the IGF structure as potentially creating a more permanent space for the kind of discussion that needs to take place. Obviously, there's going to be a meeting in India, there's going to be a meeting in Egypt, and the dynamic coalitions as they exist right now, they actually are around issues. There is an opportunity in the structure for us to actually create a point of contact to move forward with the discussions that we've started here. They're very complex issues, and they're very complex elements that are not going, I mean, this was a first attempt to just kind of bring everybody together, but I do think that there is an enormous opportunity for us to look at how to move forward, and we can do that in a more structured way through this structure of the IGF. So my proposal would be, the creation of a dynamic coalition for that purpose, and the structure lends itself to that, rather than a statement. I don't think the statement will go anywhere.
Okay. Well, let's just hold on to this one, unless it's related to the proposal. Let's just have a quick show of hands. All those who would agree to creating a dynamic coalition, hands up. Anyone opposed in principle to such an idea? Okay, we're going to need to know what that is, how to do it in the next 10 to 15 minutes. That'll be fine. But I think what the statement could say is that the child protection or the online safety whatever NGOs declare today that we wish to establish a dynamic coalition. That statement could be made, and then however it then works with the IGF secretariat could be worked out. Is there anything else on this point? I mean, this obviously seems like a good way to.
There it is. Okay, we have heard a lot of things and discussions in different workshops, and I think all of us agree about the legislation level, and we can also say something on that part because we definitely have to make them worldwide and try to make them implement them all around the world to have more or less the same laws in some way. So I think from my perspective, I think that's something we all can agree upon.
Let's be clear: this is laws on illegal content such as child abuse images, not harmful content, because I don't think we're going to get that. Not in the next 15 minutes, anyway.
But I'm working for it, so.
Right. Okay. Anything else on this particular point? If not, you had a.
My point was that in my hotel room, I have an American workbook on social psychology, and there is an extensive review. There are many, many research papers which show that watching violence makes people violent. Watching violence for children makes them violent. For example, there is an experiment when an adult was beating some doll in front of them. After them, children in this group did it, and children control group didn't. So I can give you a very big review on this. And that's the same for adults.
I have a book that says the opposite. It's also, I have a book from social psychology and media reception, which I've studied, and it says the opposite. So you're talking about model learning, but this is a totally different discussion. So don't take it now.
Okay. So who will be responsible for this structured dynamic coalition? Who will be the secretary?
I'm coming from the European Commission, so you would hope that I would probably take on this task, yeah? Yes, I have to disappoint you in that sense. I have been instructed by my superiors, so to say, that I cannot take on that task. I mean, we would like to participate, and we would follow up as far as we can, but we cannot take on any organizational role. The reason is basically that there are really a lot of things going on already.
We do have an opportunity this afternoon when I report back just to make that announcement or just to say it, not necessarily as this is what happened in our workshop, because it didn't, it happened subsequently, but if that's okay, I'm getting some nods from Australia, that would be the way to go. So good, so Europe is smiling too, good. Go ahead.
The idea of a dynamic coalition is an interesting one, but actually putting it together is the challenge, and that means you need some sort of hub, and I'm not sure where that is, you know, or which side of the Atlantic. I suspect it's one side of the Atlantic or the other, because the other comment I was going to make was that this is a rather Western liberal discussion, and it strikes me that what's in the back of our minds is we worry about particular emphases translating into other parts of the world. And I actually think it's important, therefore, that we get a good, structured understanding that takes account of the fact that we have different constitutional arrangements, that, yes, there are some different cultural arrangements, but still, nevertheless, you know, we're able to map out, as I think we can, some sensible ways for going forward. And I think, you know, the question is, can we look for partners and hubs or whatever that can help that process? And finally, from the floor, as well as supporting an early comment today, there will be a stock-taking session and a way forward discussion on the last day. I'll not be in a position to raise anything from the floor because I discover I'm on the panel. But so I intend to say something, but I think nevertheless there's a much broader discussion that we should try to encourage, and particularly this. The matter of cross-linking. It may be something that, for example, the advisory group should be encouraged to think about in the lead-up to the next meeting, so that we don't just have the bottom-up structure, but we actually have an attempt to encourage some combined work. Thanks.
I just want to ask you, Colin, since you are a little bit involved in the organization of this event. I mean, having a dynamic coalition is well. It means that we can have a meeting point and we can discuss issues that we want to discuss. But how can we make, if we have a dynamic coalition, how do we make the results, the discussions, the issues that we want to raise, how do we make that more visible to the other groups or the other dynamic coalitions and in the next IGF? Is there any structure for doing that or, you know,
yeah, I'm not sure that I can add very much, but I think getting something out early today is important. Try to encourage some contact between today and tomorrow. I'm a bit of a skeptic about dynamic coalitions. I think that it's fine. I don't know what it is. There are no rules around them, and that's a good thing. But it basically is about people with different interests getting together to try and make progress on a range of issues. And clearly, I think we all agree there's value in trying to do that. So, yeah.
But I think the challenge is to keep people from the freedom of expression sector to that coalition, because up to now it's a coalition of people coming from the youth protection area and not from the freedom of expression area.
All right. Any other final thoughts?
Sorry, what I should have added is, and I don't know who's here, but you know, there may be some allies out there, UNESCO, OECD, maybe some of the academic institutions that actually have an interest in resolving, taking forward these issues. So I can't help you to find people.
We're going to turn you into a true believer. So I think all we're doing right now is just building a very, very loose structure upon which we can then pour stuff and people and ideas and thoughts and dynamically work on this between now and the next IGF. Just simply to raise the visibility, but I absolutely agree we need the top-down stuff. Usually we complain about top-down, but we do need the chaps and the chapesses at 35,000 feet to kind of recognize what's actually going on down here. I hear a lot of tummies rumbling, and mine certainly is. Any final thoughts? Yeah.
Just a very simple one. Shall we just at least put everybody on the same mailing list and shall we at least put people on same mailing list, and by circulating the, you know, piece of paper, just write down your.
Would you be willing to take that task on?
You mean handling out a piece of paper? Yeah, I can do that.
Thank you. No. The thing that you're actually proposing, would you like to take that on?
No, I don't know what to pose. So I'm just saying that. Well, at least you get people to connect with each other. And
all right, we can create a mailing list. Could someone with a piece of paper put name? name and email address, pass it around. Print, please. Thank you. Do you want to finish off? Because you had a...
Yeah, I would just propose that maybe one of the things that we will do and circulate in that mailing list is perhaps a very, very short concept paper, just a short concept note basically about the purpose of the group, of the coalition, if it's called that, just so that we're all clear that it's a discussion. We're not here to make any decisions or we're not pushing any agendas, that it's really to grapple with some very complex issues.
It's for me, it's a mini IGF. It's a online safety, child protection, free speech IGF. So in the spirit in which, and by the way, we did have some industry people here before. We do have government here. We have nonprofits. In the spirit of the three-way multi-stakeholder approach, that would be very much, I would see the coalition continuing. Pia, did you have a last?
I have the mail addresses of all but four of you. I have the mail addresses all but for you, so I can send maybe the email addresses to you, to some of you, and you can yeah, because I mean, otherwise we just do the job twice. It's not a, just give, if you can give me the your, huh? It's the two from Hong Kong, it's you from from the Harvard, and you, and I didn't get your. Oh, and also from Oxford, yeah? Colin, I have, yes. So there are five. Yeah, Lulu is on the list. And David, yes.
Anything else?
Sorry, just so procedure now, we're going to draft something, an announcement for today. We do need the concept paper. Do we have deadlines for doing that? Or are we just going to circulate and wait for feedback? It's an open slot, 12:30 for side two.